Today's scripture comes from John, the 12th chapter, the 1st through the 8th verses. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, the home of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. They gave a dinner for him. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those at the table with him. Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard and anointed Jesus' feet and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, the one who was about to betray him, said, "Why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. He kept the common purse and used to steal what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You have always had the poor with you, but you will not do not always have me." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. You may be seated. There was a man in New York City, this was some time ago, back when $100,000 was really quite a bit. He was kidnapped, and his kidnappers demanded from his family $100,000. The story ends well. They get him back. He's unharmed. They get the money back. They catch the kidnappers and all of that. But Calvin Trilling was writing about this event, and it so happened that the way that they got him back was for $30,000, not $100,000. His wife had haggled with the kidnappers. And Trilling said that he just kind of wondered what it was like when he got back to realize that he had been restored back home at a bargain. He said, "I just wonder what that conversation was like. $100,000? Are you crazy? $100,000 for that? Have you seen him? I mean, you know, look at that gut. I mean, are you serious? $100,000? And she said, "You know, $30,000. That's my top price. That's as far as I will go." And so she got him back at $30,000. So some of you may identify with you know, with the wife in this case. You know, what am I getting into? I sort of identify with him. I'd like to think that I was so important to the people that are closest to me that they would be willing to do anything. I mean, pay any price, do whatever is necessary in order to keep me safe, in order to get me back, in order to do whatever it is that needed to be done for me if I was in that need. And sometimes we get the impression maybe we're not worth as much as we thought we were. We're always surprised if we find out that in some people's eyes, especially those that are most important to us, that we're not valued as much as we thought. In this scene, you have a woman, Mary. And she comes in the middle of a meal, and she takes a very, very expensive jar of ointment, perfume, and she breaks it, and she pours it on Jesus' feet, wipes it with her tears. Judas is there, one of Jesus' disciples. He reprimands her for doing such a wasteful thing, saying that she could have taken that, something like $35,000, probably in American dollars. She could have taken that and used it for something important. She could have taken that, given it to the poor. But she didn't. She just poured it all on Jesus' feet. What a waste. When you think about Judas in this case, and now John calls him a thief. He waters it down. He was a thief. He was a person that kept the purse. He wanted the money, not because he cared for the poor, but because he wanted it for himself. But sometimes, I think we all have thought an awful lot about Judas over the years and have tried to think about what was going on in his mind. And you know, most of the time, the people that do what they do, they for some reason feel like it is the right thing to do at the time. If they didn't feel that way, they wouldn't have done it. And that's the way we've been. Most of the times, the things that we have done, the decisions and choices that we have made, we made them because we felt like, under the circumstances at the time, that it was the right thing to do. Most of us, I am one of them, believe that Judas was among those that were called revolutionaries at the time. Judas Iscariot actually comes from the word Sicari, Judas of the Sicari. It was revolutionaries that had one purpose. They were single-minded. They were very disciplined people, and they were very principled people, by and large. And their sole purpose was to expel the Romans from the land. The Romans had no business being there. And the revolutionaries were the ones that were intent on getting them out of there. And it's interesting, the people that Jesus surrounded himself with, his disciples, because he had such a cross-section of all of those. But Judas was one that was probably that way. Social activists, in a way. Most social activists are very intent on the poor and making sure that the least among us, that the poor are cared for. So he throws out this very noble thing. What a waste. You know, this could have been used to care for the poor. When you, get to this point of the story, you see that Jesus is in a place with a family that he's probably been with many, many times before. He's been in the home of Mary and Martha a number of times. This story is actually in all four of the Gospels, but it's a little different in each of the Gospels. Matthew and Luke, for instance, have this woman coming to Jesus in the house of Simon the leper in their Gospels. And this woman is a stranger. We don't know who she is. In Luke's Gospel, it is also in the house of Simon, but it is Simon the Pharisee. And she seems to be, she's called a woman of the city, and a sinner that has come and done this at Jesus' feet. And she probably was a prostitute, and probably one that Jesus had been with before. But in John's Gospel, the one that we just read, this Mary is the sister of Martha and Lazarus. And Jesus has actually come back to their home. They're having a dinner for him, and you probably know well enough the story as to why they are having a dinner for Jesus. This is the 12th chapter, but in the last chapter, the whole chapter is dealing with the fact that Lazarus has died. Jesus actually came and raised Lazarus from the dead, and things started to happen when that happened. Caiaphas is one that came in the picture in the previous chapter, right at the end of it, because everybody is talking about this, how Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and now, pretty soon, everybody is going to be flocking to Jesus. Everyone is going to hail Jesus as the Messiah. I mean, and as soon as that happens, and this is what they were talking about in the Sanhedrin. Caiaphas, the chief priest, the other priests around there, they were talking about how when this happens, Rome is going to come down on Jerusalem with full force. And that's where Caiaphas says something like this, you know, it's expedient that one man die so that the whole nation can be spared. It's expedient that one man die so that the nation can be spared. John saw that as a prophecy of what Jesus actually did when he died for everyone. But in Caiaphas' mind, it was just to keep, the force and the power of Rome from destroying the nation. And you have that. Caiaphas sort of representing the establishment, who always sees people kind of like Judas as an outlaw. It's the poor and the oppressed that see people like Judas more as a hero. But they both concluded at about the same time, while Jesus was at Bethany in the home of Mary and Martha, that Jesus had to go. Jesus reprimanded Judas, not Mary, but Judas. And Judas went from there and betrayed Jesus, got 30 pieces of silver, which would have kind of made up for all of this wasted nard that had been poured on Jesus' feet, but really resenting Jesus for reprimanding him and for not turning out to be the kind of Messiah that Judas was just expecting that Jesus ought to be. And when you look at this story of Jesus with Lazarus, you see that Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen to him when he went to raise Lazarus from the dead. He knew that the Sanhedrin, all of those who are in power, not only in the Jewish power, but in the Roman power, were going to respond to this, and that it was going to cost him his life. You can literally say that Jesus gave his life for Lazarus because he was the precipitating event that was going to force them to take Jesus' life from him. Now, after all of this had happened, he went to Ephraim for a little while to hide out because he knew that they were looking for him. And then he came back to Mary and Martha's house. And guess who was there? Lazarus was there, resurrected from the dead, still feeling a little fragile. You got Mary and Martha there, his sisters. You have Jesus there, and you have Judas there, five people there at that dinner table. And they've seen all that has taken place. Mary was in there in that whole event when Jesus said, your brother will live. Lazarus, come out of the tomb. And when he said those words to Lazarus' sister that I say in every funeral I've ever done, I've done hundreds of funerals. I've never had one where we did not remember what Jesus said when he was talking with Mary and Martha before he raised Lazarus from the dead. Your brother will live. She said, I know that he will live in the resurrection. He said, I'm the resurrection and I am life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, yet shall they live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. And that was it. Mary remembers all of this. And Jesus says, now I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to be turned over to the authorities. There will be an execution, a crucifixion. I'm going to Jerusalem to die. It's between courses. And Mary just leaves and goes out and finds this perfume and spontaneously comes back, pours it all on Jesus' feet, and wipes it with her hair in this extravagant gesture of love and gratitude. When I think about this gesture, it reminds me so often what Christianity is all about, because I think we lose this. The more you talk about it, think about it, sometimes we get to thinking Christianity is about laws or about rules. It's about our creeds and what it is that we say we believe. Sometimes we think it is about theology. It's not about anything. It's not even about ethics. Christianity at heart is about something that God has done for us and what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. Basically, this is it. God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Mary seemed to get that first glimpse of that. He said he's going to Jerusalem to die. I've got to somehow express my gratitude and my thanks and my love for him for what he has done and what he is doing here. And she runs and gets the perfume, pours it on his feet. I don't know about you, but I think sometimes that is what Jesus longs for from us. Nobody cared about the poor more than Jesus. You remember when he was approached by somebody, a very wealthy man, who wanted to know how to have life. And he finally, after he saw what Jesus was, what the man was up to, said, okay, go, sell everything you have and go and give it to the what? The poor. Go and give it all to the poor and then come and follow me. Nobody cared about the poor more than Jesus did. But then he comes here and says, leave her alone, Judas. The poor you have with you always, but you will not always have me. And I think that there is a time when we need to realize not only do we have Jesus in the moment, but we have one another in the moment. And sometimes I think that we can get so high-sounding in the way that we care about the poor in the abstract that we fail to see those that have been placed right in front of us who have needs that need to be met at the time. And Jesus is really sort of blessing that. Don't get lost so much in all of the needs that you see in this world that you miss the ones that are right in front of you. There's a book, Mary Gordon wrote it, Final Payments is the name of it, and it revolves around this story a lot. Mary has been with a woman downstairs in this apartment building that is very poor, and she's had a difficult relationship with her because she's always felt such guilt and been made to feel such guilt. And finally, they come to a blowout in the conversation. Mary leaves, and the woman again looks at her and says, I'm a poor woman. And she says, yeah, well, the poor you have with you always. And then she slams the door and walks away. But as she is walking back upstairs, she's thinking, what did Jesus mean when he was saying, the poor you have with you always, the poor you have with you always? And then she comes to think, you know, I think what he means is that life is short. You never know when it's going to be over. You never know when it's going to change. You never know when the accident of death is going to be there. And the thing that you're going to always regret most is that you didn't do for the ones that were right in front of you what you had the opportunity to do. And the call is to be extravagant then with our affection and to realize that Jesus himself saw how important it was, even in all of our relationship with Him, when the moment comes, not to refuse, not to postpone or procrastinate, but to be extravagant in our affection, be extravagant in our love, like Jesus was extravagant